Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 14th day of December, Anno Domini 2019, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. We've already seen indications that American consumers are holding on to their smartphones longer than before, posing challenges for companies like Apple and Samsung, for whom mobile phone sales are important to the bottom line. A new report from the NPD Research Group reiterates that point, but adds that fewer than 10% of American smartphone buyers spend more than $1,000, effectively ruling out flagship phones like the iPhone 11 Pro and the Samsung Galaxy Note 10 that gather most of the marketer and media attention. This report may also explain why iPhone sales dropped 35% year over year in China. The main point of concern raised by the NPD report, though, is 5G adoption. 5G phones will likely be unaffordable for many consumers at first, with the first wave of mainstream 5G phones in 2020 likely to cost at least $1,000 in most cases. On the other hand, consumer awareness of the imminent rollout of 5G is high, and many consumers cited that coming change as a reason they're holding out on spending big on new phones. It could be that some consumers who can't afford $1,000 handsets but haven't made the plunge will do so when 5G arrives, provided that it offers all the benefits marketers have claimed. That will likely vary quite significantly by city and region, however. And speaking of cities and regions, the report also found notable differences in smartphone buying habits across different market areas. For example, the NPD claims that Americans in major urban centers like New York City or Los Angeles are more likely to spend $1,000 or more on a smartphone. It's unclear from the data whether this is a result of comparatively high average incomes in those areas or other factors. In any case, the NPD therefore recommends to smartphone manufacturers that marketing budgets be focused on those market areas for those types of phones, especially as the 5G era approaches. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is what's your sweet spot for a new phone? Your choices are over $1,000, $700 to $1,000, $500 to $700, $300 to $500. I'll keep my landline, thanks. And other. Currently, we have 114 people who've taken the poll, and not shockingly, $300 to $500 is the number one choice, followed by $500 to $700. $700 to $1,000 is third, then other, then I'll keep my landline. Only six of you said your sweet spot's over $1,000. So you have, excuse me. You have quite a range there, and we'd like to know why and what you picked and why, and particularly if you selected others. So head on over to the forums. That's easy enough to find. Just go to soundbites.org. Again, Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff. You'll see the forums. And the second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least the number one item under poll discussion is 14 December 19. What's your sweet spot for a new phone? And right now, I think I'm the only one. Oh, no, there's four posts. No. Oh, that's interesting. There's only one post for that one. Apparently, no. December 7th, green light is there because somebody else just posted there. But, And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Well, you and I both, you know, with our Pixel phones.
Under $500.
Yeah. And I still to this day remember when I went in, I had to replace my phone because I had the original Pixel. And it was just not holding the charge anymore. And I go in there, and that sales guy kept trying to upsell me to the $1,000 phone, Pixel phone. And I said, no, fine. The 3A is fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, I want the 3A. All right. And then he couldn't give me that phone fast enough and get me out of the store.
Yeah.
Didn't want to know me from Jack Squat.
He didn't get his spiff.
Yeah. Because he wanted to upsell me to that $1,000 phone. And it's for what? The 3A is doing everything that the other phone did, and it's even a better camera than I had on the original Pixel.
Well, and a lot of the reports say the 4 isn't that good. It's not good enough to upgrade from a 3.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But in terms of phones, most companies don't really talk a lot about their sales.
Yeah.
Numbers. So we don't know how many Apple phones are sold under $1,000 versus over $1,000. Same with Google, same with Samsung. But when everybody's pushing their flagship phones for $1,000 and up, $1,500 for a phone, I think not. Thank you very much.
I can buy how many Pixels?
Yeah, right.
The other thing to keep in mind.
At least 3.
Yeah. The other thing to keep in mind is don't hold your breath for 5G.
Right.
Yeah. 5G, well, right now there are companies selling 5G phones, and the 5G service costs more. 5G is only available in a couple of cities, and they'll say that. It's available in, you know, Chicago. But no, it's available on this one block in Chicago.
Right.
Yeah. Not the whole city, just that one block. Because mm-hmm. The way 5G antennas work, it's a lot like Wi-Fi. You need an antenna every couple hundred feet.
Right.
With 4G and typical cellular antennas, it's every couple miles.
Well, that's why I was saying to Nick just last week, I says, you know, it just seems like we see more and more towers going up for the phone services. Yep. Everywhere you go now, you turn around and you see these huge towers, which were before very offensive to folks because, you know, they didn't want it in their backyard, but now because they depend on their phone service, yep, and that they've got to have that in their neighborhood so they get good coverage.
I like that one you can see from 490 in Bushnell's Basin that's supposed to look like a tree.
Yeah.
But it's a straight regular tree with some green things sticking out of it.
Well, that's been through so many iterations.
Yeah.
That has had, I think, 3 different camouflages, have you?
Yeah.
Trying to disguise it, and it's like, yeah, it's still a cell tower.
Yeah, exactly.
No matter how you try to cover it, folks, it is, if it walks like a duck, it quacks like a duck, I think it's, a duck.
But yeah, with 5G, exactly, they're going to have to start putting more and more antennas. They're smaller antennas, which are pretty good. On every street corner, basically, and in a city where you've got buildings, literally every street corner, because mm-hmm, it's not going to go through the building that well.
Yeah, no, it's right, dead spots. So that's why, you know, I can't really see. That might just be another flash in the pan. You know, 5G is great, but for the coverage and everything else,
well,
I think that's where it's going to get porked.
It's not. It's going. It's around. It, because of its speed. It'll be around, but it won't be common years.
Yeah, not a long time.
I don't believe we have any of it in Rochester.
Right, and save your money right now, folks, because, I mean, like we've always said about anything, don't be the pioneers. They're the ones with the arrows in the back, and here you are. You'll be all dressed up, paying all this great money for 5G, and like Steve said, and not getting it, and very sporadic, depending on where you go.
Yeah.
Stick with what's now and reliable. You know, I mean, the 4G service is phenomenal anyhow.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you want that extra bit of speed and are willing to pay the premium for it, which most people aren't going to notice it anyway,
sorry,
but okay.
Yeah.
You're paying more for the phone, you're paying more for the service, and it's only going to work in an extremely tiny area until probably 2021.
Easy.
Yeah.
And the
reality is, if you bought a brand new phone today, by the time you're ready to replace it, 5G will be here.
Yeah. And like you said, how much of a noticeable difference for the time that you use it? Are you really going to notice the difference between 4G and 5G? Realistically.
The reality is most of the lag these days is happening at the other end. It's response time from the system at the other end. So, you know, if you can move data even three times as fast, but it still takes 2 seconds for it to start coming to you, that three times as fast isn't going to be all that noticeable.
No. Flash in the pan.
Right. Particularly since what most people do with their phones is either on the phone, if they're playing a game or whatever.
Texting,
or video calls. And the video calls don't use that much bandwidth because they aren't very high quality.
Although you are old.
I am old.
So the youngsters these days will watch movies and TV shows, and especially YouTube, on their tiny little phone screen.
Yes, they will. But
which
even
then doesn't
so,
need that much bandwidth because it's a tiny little phone screen.
It's a tiny little screen. So they still aren't going to gain quite as much.
No.
Where you're going to gain is if you replace a slow internet service with 5G.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're going to pay an awful lot of money.
Yeah.
But clearly money is no object to you.
My green light's at 99%.
There you go.
Oh, we don't even want to. Nick and I had this discussion before.
Yeah.
You've heard of a kid, you know, being envious at a candy store?
Standing outside the window staring in.
Yeah. Well, I'm porked off from the fact that I've been wanting green light, you know, as long as Nick's had it.
Yep.
I have it now on the side of my house. And all I can do is stare at it because they haven't come to hook it up to go inside the house.
You've got a long drill bit, don't you?
Yeah.
He's already done all that.
I could do that easy. It's just getting the wire to go from that little box that they nicely placed on the outside of my house where it's doing me no good right at the moment.
That one afternoon you weren't home to say, okay, you can come into the house.
No, I was there when the guys were running the wire to the house. They do it in two separate moves now. They come to your house and they hook it up on the outside. As a matter of fact, they were doing three other houses in the neighborhood, putting it on the outside. And he says, all right, in 2 to 3 days, you'll be getting a notice saying, you know, schedule the appointment. All day long for the past few days, I've been looking for that notice. Come inside. Yeah, I'll schedule an appointment. I'm still waiting. It's there.
You're going to get it Monday afternoon.
My orb is sitting on the other side of that wall waiting for the fiber just to be hooked up to their little, you said it's just a little modem?
It's a little box,
Yeah. Hook it up from there right to my orb and I'm ready to go.
Yeah, it's really all it is. Run one wire, stick the box on it, plug it into the wall, you'll be done. They'll do a test, but then they're done.
But the cat cable is all ready to plug into their network, that little box.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. It ain't happening yet.
Although I do have to say the 100 megabit I get with Spectrum is okay for me, especially since my son moved out and isn't playing his games all the time.
Right.
Oh, that's one thing
I'm sort of using the excuse of switching to Greenlight to cancel all my cable and go to streaming only.
There you go.
Well, that's the other thing. I just got another notice. Oh, for my convenience, they're going to bump me up to 200 meg.
Wow.
Yeah, because Spectrum is now offering 100, they still want to be faster and cheaper. Greenlight does.
Yeah, they're faster and cheaper. Yeah. Yeah.
But it's still not cheaper than $50 for 500. Yep.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I get it. I absolutely get it.
No, you've got it.
I've got it.
And I have it, but it's not on the inside of the house.
And I'm very excited about that. The fiber is coming from inside the house. All right, we should probably, before Dave comes over here and strangles me, we should go to the phones. Our first caller patiently waiting on the line, Brian from Walworth, New York. Hiya, Brian. What's up? Maybe he's not patient. Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here. I'm probably being obsessively overly compulsive here. My I use Avast as my internet security program and antivirus and things like that, and it's telling me I've got 9 unnecessary programs that it wants me to eliminate that I don't use. And I don't know, and that's, and related to that, on my downloads file, there's a whole bunch of files of software that I originally downloaded and then executed as I got new versions of software, but the original download is still there, and I've never been sure, can I get rid of those?
Well, yes. Once you've installed a program or you've decided you don't want to use it, you don't need the installation program anymore.
We used to say keep them in the olden days of dial-up, because if you needed to install it again, it took forever to download. But now, if you do need it again, you're usually better off downloading the newest version.
Yeah, because I was going to say, 10-to-1 odds, if you wait, you know, if you've downloaded it, say, a couple weeks ago, there's very well could be a new version
exactly
out there that you'd want to get the latest and greatest, because they're constantly updating stuff.
Yeah, so
under this list of unnecessary programs, one I've got up in front of me now, one of them is called Update for Windows 10 for x64-based systems, and it's got a code number after that. I totally haven't used it for 9 months.
It's probably an update you already installed. So Microsoft has its own, what do they call it now? The Dr. Wizard?
Doctor,
something like that. And one of the things it can do is go through the installers that Microsoft leaves behind. The idea being that if you have a problem, you can uninstall that update. But if it's been working for 9 months, you probably aren't going to need to uninstall it, and it will free up some disk space. That used to be a bigger issue.
Engine components? The hell's that?
Something to do with your Intel CPU, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You've probably never run it, but it's in there for Intel.
I have no idea what they are and what they really do. HP Touchpoint Analytics Client.
Do you have an HP computer?
Yeah, I've got an HP computer, yeah. And I've got an HP printer.
So the HP Touchpoint is the mouse control.
Yeah, okay. Well, it wants the analytics client deleted.
Yeah, because you haven't run it yourself directly, but that doesn't mean that the HP software hasn't been.
Right.
So sometimes these cleanup programs are overly aggressive.
Well, that's partly why I called you guys, because I'm going, do I really want to get rid of this stuff or not?
I would generally, unless you recognize it as something you absolutely don't need, just leave it. Just let it alone.
It's not occupying
that
much space.
This whole thing, and I'm probably being overly obsessive compulsive here.
Yeah, probably. So, leave the programs you don't recognize, but in terms of the stuff in download, all it's doing is taking up space, but if you don't want it, delete it.
Fine.
Yep.
Thank you.
Okie doke. Thanks.
Although I did read a story once about someone that was keeping all their files in downloads. And then the IT came along to install the new version of something or other, and the disk was full, so they deleted the downloads.
Yeah, sure.
Or empty the trash. No, I was keeping those files.
The new
version of Safari has a really cool feature I like now. If you download the same file again, normally you'd get .1, .2, .3, .4, .5. We've seen people have hundreds of the same download. Safari now says, oh, you've already downloaded that, and it doesn't bother making a second copy.
Nice.
It's the same file name, the same date, the same size, from the same location. You already got that. I won't bother again.
That is nice.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Matthew from Webster, New York. Hi, Matthew. What's up?
Hey, what's going on, buddy? Let's get all this Christmas crap out of the way. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you, too.
All right, so here's the deal. I got this app I want to tell you guys about on the Android. Can I spread it out to the users out here? It will be very beneficial for the whole community.
Did you write it?
All right, it's called Libby. If you have a library card, believe it or not, actually, you have access to all of magazines, books, and everything else. My girlfriend goes through hundreds of dollars spending on Amazon, and I'm like, watch it, babe.
We forget the public library is available.
You can get the book for free on here. So get the Libby app, get a library card, download it, and it will be so cool.
Libby. And by the way, You can get a library card online. You don't even have to put pants on. Go to the Monroe County Library site.
I would actually guess that too.
Yep. You go to the Monroe County Library site, the MCS, MCL, whatever it is, and
Library Web.
Yeah, MCLW then?
No,
I don't know.
It's
whatever.
Library Web.
But the thing is, Nick, let me tell you something. She's paying like $13, $15, $17 for books. I was like, why don't you check this out? And she's like, oh, yeah, I see the author that I like.
Yeah.
And I see the book that I like. And there it is. And I'm like, well, save money, baby.
Yep.
Exactly right. No, absolutely. I use Libby all the time. They all do right. have they do have a limited number of... what are the checkouts?
Yeah, so it's like a physical book. If they only have two copies, only two people can check the book out.
Right.
Even though with
it's
digital
kind
books,
of like
it doesn't matter.
Like a thing. Yeah.
Right. And it depends on, you know, my beloved bride is an avid mystery reader, and so she goes through books like mad. There's also a site called FreeBooksy.com.
Okay.
And they have free ebooks every day.
All right. Sounds
now,
good.
They're
sounds
a limited nice, they're a fairly limited selection, right? It's not every book. But I go there every day and there's sci-fi and mystery and cozy mysteries and romance novels and vampire books and, you know, a few in each category. Every day they're different. So I go every day. And usually they're Kindle, but also Nook and Google and Kobo. So you should be able to find lots of books that satisfy your urge to read without spending a lot of money.
No diggity, no doubt. Hey, I appreciate the advice, buddy.
Thank you, Matthew. Have a great holiday.
Yeah, you too, man.
Always. Thanks.
One thing I have noticed is that I have an electronic library card that I've been using.
Yep.
You don't get as many books as you do if you get a physical card at the library.
Right. But when you can use that electronic card over the internet and download to Libby, you really only need to get one at a time.
Yeah. And I've found that like book one of the series is available on Libby, but the rest of them aren't until I get the physical card.
Oh.
So I've also got a Kindle, so I get a free book a month from a Kindle owner's library.
Right.
And there's the Amazon Prime lending library.
Right.
And so I'm working on three different book series because I only get one a month and I can read a book in a week.
And the other thing about free Booksy, of course, is it's usually the first of a series.
Yeah.
Is free and then they hook you.
Yeah.
Well, and I like to wait until the whole series is done, you know, all 7, 8, 9, 10 books before I start because I don't want to get caught. There's a series by Rick Brown. He's got 75 books planned in the series.
Wow.
15 books.
He better be 11.
Well, he's designing it as a 5-year TV series with 15 episodes a year.
Interesting.
And so I read the first year, and then the second year, he's up to a 13th book. So I got to wait for the 15 to come out, and then I can read them all.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And we'll be right back with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand.
Are you planning a
more
vacation?
More Soundbites is next.
Take the great savings you receive with your member card with you. Order a
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Ray all the way from New Orleans, Louisiana, on the line. Hi, Ray. What's up?
Hello, everyone. This is a question. I had actually texted this in, I don't know, a bunch of weeks back, but Steve wasn't around. I have a Mac running High Sierra, 8 gig of memory. It's about a 5-year-old machine, and I'm one of the updating to Mojave.
How much RAM does it have?
It says it has 8 gig of memory.
8's okay. More is better. Does it have a spinning drive or a solid state drive?
I'm gonna say solid state. I'm not sure.
Okay.
It says DDR3, whatever that is.
That's memory, not storage.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I don't know.
it would have a SATA drive or a hard drive in it. It's either a SATA drive or a flash drive for storage. Generally, what we have seen is Mojave runs a lot slower on older computers than the current OSs do. If you have 8 gigs of RAM, that helps. 16 is better. If you have an SSD, that helps as well. The bigger issue is checking your third-party program compatibility to make sure things like Microsoft Office, and if you have any of the Adobe Creative Suite or Quicken or QuickBooks, those tend to be the three most fragile programs that break with every OS update. And in the audio world, if you're using any of the audio tools from, I just lost it now, the big audio.
Audacity?
No, that's one of the free ones. Avid, the Media Composer, and some things like that. They tend to be more fragile for the OS upgrades. And it's even worse going to Catalina, which is now the current OS, because Catalina is 64-bit only, and so old 32-bit apps don't work, period. Although the installer gives you the not very helpful message that these programs are not optimized for use with Catalina, which is correct. But if it said these programs will not work, that would be a lot more correct.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I'll get rid of the little program that keeps sitting there on the machine saying it wants to do the install for Mojave, because it's been sitting there for about a year.
Yeah, that's also what... Well, and that would be an old version anyway. You'd probably want to download the latest version. Apple started doing that, automatically downloading the upgrade and then giving you a button saying, here, you should install this upgrade. Even after Microsoft got lambasted for years about forcing a Windows 10 upgrade onto people. You know, you'd wake up in the morning and your Windows 7 has suddenly got Windows 10 on it. And Microsoft got a lot of bad press about that, and then Apple started doing it. At least it doesn't install, but it downloads, it prompts you, and if you don't read the messages close enough, you could end up with a new OS and none of your software works anymore. So that free OS ends up costing you hundreds of dollars in buying new programs.
Right.
I guess I'll leave everything just the way it is.
Some people are doing that and just waiting until they get their newer machine with the new OS on it already.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate the information. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you, Ray. Good luck.
Good luck. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
The same kind of thing in the Windows 7 world is that they are sticking with Windows 7 because they don't want the change. But now Windows 7 support deadline is happening. With Apple, they're still supporting 10.13. So 10.15 is the current version. They usually support the current and too old. But if you're still running 10.12 or earlier, then you're not getting the security patches. You're not getting the bug fixes. Your browser is getting old and may not support the latest technologies. It's usually the browser that becomes the key upgrading factor, because you can't get to the website you want to anymore.
Right, and it is very important to make sure you're running a good antivirus program if you're running the old version.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. What's up, Mark?
Hi, guys. Heard you mention about the library before.
Yeah.
And another thing you can do is you can borrow movies. Yeah, Hoopla.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, which is neat. I've got it on the Roku, but I can stream it to on the computer. You can download them for the amount of days that they let you borrow them. Also.
Yep.
I think it's like 4 days.
And a lot of people don't realize that the public library also does movies and TV shows. In fact, my wife just she got checked out discount tickets to the Eastman House from the library.
Nice.
And then you go, and then when you finished with your visit at the library at the Eastman House, you take the discount ticket voucher back to the library for someone else to check out.
Nice.
I wouldn't have expected that from a library getting discount tickets to somewhere.
Yeah, there's a lot of neat things you can do at the library. So
yeah.
But yeah, the Hoopla app is really neat. You know, it's got some different stuff, a lot of BBC stuff on there if you like BBC.
Yeah, and who doesn't?
And yep. Oh yeah, really. So I just want to throw that out there as another tool Library's not always about books.
Yeah.
We love our libraries.
Of course we do.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks, Mark. Good
You're
points.
Thank
Excellent.
You.
Thanks. Yeah. Definitely check it out. You can get a library card over the internet. You can borrow books through Libby over the internet. You can get movies through Hoopla over the internet. So it's all easy. It's all fast. It's all secure. And it's all free. So you can't beat that. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Andy from Greece, New York. Hi, Andy. What's up?
Hi, guys. Merry Christmas and all that good stuff.
Oh, you too.
Into the other stuff. Two things. A couple weeks ago, my wife's phone started just putting all kinds of error messages up. Google Play Services has stopped working. She'd never used Google Play Services to buy anything or do anything. And I tried getting to the all the usual app management stuff to stop it and restart it or reload it or whatever. Everything was grayed out, wouldn't let me at anything. The only thing I did see was it showed me what it was connected into, and boy, that was a frightening read. Google Play Services can run your entire phone.
Google Play Services does run your entire phone.
Yeah, well, it can go in and change anything and everything it wants to. But it finally, after a couple of days of doing that, it fixed itself. But is there anything it just kept putting up this error message repeatedly. Google Play Services stopped running. It was like a little box, and it kept blinking. And every time I went to get rid of it, I had to touch it, the number, I had to hit the X the number of times it blinked, because it was like putting the error message box over the top of itself. It didn't stagger it, so you couldn't tell how many boxes it had open. I mean,
right.
Is there anything you can do to fix this, repair it, or you just have to live with it till it fixes itself?
Well, generally speaking, when that happens, it's a bad update.
Okay.
So one thing you can do is to, if Play Services stops working, you restart your phone, clear out all your cache and data, uninstall the Play Services updates, and then re-update. Because it's usually either a bad update, and if it's a bad update, it'll happen again, or it was a bad download, in which case another download should fix it and make it work fine.
Just as simple as that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll keep that in mind. Second question. Kind of pushed by the recent mess with the Ring phones where things are being hijacked because people
have
passwords and all that other terrible stuff. And in the process of moving to streaming services. And I'm looking at it, and I got a couple of Roku sticks, and I've got a couple of Samsung TVs that are wireless to start with. Is there a way to go in and set these up for second factor authentication, or do you have to actually put, I mean, what I'm concerned about is I've got Amazon Prime, so I can get Amazon Video, but I really don't want to go putting my Amazon password across my TV set if it's not as secure as it should be.
Yeah, unfortunately, two-factor authentication is managed at the other end, not at your end. If they don't institute it, you don't get it.
But Amazon does have it.
Amazon has it, but not every service does.
Right.
Amazon has it. Google has it.
And there's kind of an interesting semantic issue we're seeing. Some of them call it two-step. Some of them call it two-factor. Some services will send a text message as the second step. But text messages aren't secure.
Right.
So most of the services, the better services will use two-factor, where they'll use the Google Authenticator or like the YubiKey Authenticator, or Apple has their own authentication services that they support on Apple devices. And so that can be more secure than having them send a text message, which is easy for someone with intent to hijack.
Right. So, yeah, you can, on both of those services, use two-factor authentication, but not on every service.
Well, it's I'm looking at YouTube TV, which is now owned by
Google has two-factor, but do they do it for YouTube? I don't know.
I certainly haven't seen it for YouTube. No.
Well, I haven't logged in with a new device in a while.
Right. What you do is when you log in with a device, a new device, you usually get a screen that says, do you want to do two-factor authentication? Or rather, this is a new device, So we've either, however you set it up at the Google end, we've either sent you a text message or open up the Google Authenticator, and we'll allow this device. And then generally, you get a message that says allow this device always or just this one time.
Okay. But yeah, because I mean, you know, YouTube TV, I'm not too worried about it. I mean, once I put I'll set it up on my Chromebook first and then log the TV into it. But
right.
The one I'm more worried about is the Amazon Prime, obviously, because that's tied to a credit card and
yeah.
I do my purchases through it.
And Amazon does have two-factor, or two-step, they call it.
Okay. Two-step. Well, same idea, different name.
Yeah, yep. So, yeah, that should be, for those two at least, it's absolutely doable.
All right, yeah, I want to do this, but then again, I start hearing all these stories, and my inner paranoia takes over.
And it should, but you can, at least with those two apps, fairly well secure it. Now, the downside is if you say only this one time, then it'll ask every single time. But once you've authenticated the device, then the people would have to hijack that specific device, which is not impossible, but not
as easy.
Not tremendously easy, right. Some are very easy. Things like Ring and et cetera, they don't have any security whatsoever.
Well, I've changed the username and the password on the router, so that seems to work fairly well. And the wireless has a 29-character password, so...
There you go. You're in good shape then.
Drives everybody nuts, so I had to open up a guest network, which is a little less difficult, but for the grandkids. But they're not here that often, so I don't worry about that as much.
Right. And you can, depending on your router, you can set that guest network to only turn on at certain times.
Yeah, I haven't gone to that level yet because they're not here in a predictable pattern, so.
Right. Well, but I, you know, for example, my guest network turns itself off at like 11 o'clock at night.
Oh, yeah, okay.
You know, and so it's done until whatever.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that keeps the overnight monsters at bay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And make sure the grandkids go to sleep at night.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, fortunately, they tend to die somewhere between 9 and 10.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's going to end, by the way. Trust me. Yeah.
They're 3 and 4, so yeah, it'll take a while.
It'll be a while, but it'll happen.
Oh, I'm sure. The 12-year-old's a night owl, but even she crashes by 10. That 5:30 wake-up call in the morning tends to shorten the evening hours.
Yeah. Once they're teenagers, though.
Forget it.
All bets are off. All right, Andy, thanks so much.
I'm looking forward to that. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Have a good holiday.
You too. Bye-bye. Yeah, there are a lot of things that you can do with your router to protect your network. As Andy talked about, you can have a guest network for everybody else. So you've got your network, you set up a guest network, and they have to have a different login so you can turn that network off. When they leave, and then even if they have that password, it's no good to them. Or, you know, everybody goes home at 11 at midnight, that thing shuts off. So if somebody comes and sits in your driveway with that password, it's not going to do them any good because that thing is off.
We also recommend if you get any home security, thermostat, camera, things like that, put that on your guest network because if something like that gets broken into,
And they are
being broken into easily. Change the default password, step one.
Yeah.
Then if something hijacks that camera, they don't get access to the rest of your network because it's on the guest network. And most routers by design, routers. Is it a route or a root?
Root.
It's a router.
Router would be out in your lawn.
Yeah. Most routers by design, the guest devices can't see each other. So that even it helps protect the guests on your network from each other.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Pat from Webster, New York. What's up, Pat?
Hi, how you doing?
Peachy, how are you?
Good. Well, first of all, I use a Chromebook, and I have no issues.
Nice.
Except yesterday, I love to use Google for research. you know, I'm curious about a lot of topics from A to Z. I have no problem opening the main link, but you know how there's one-liners, questions like, you know, if you're looking at cars, people say, what's the different type of Jeep? And you can click that.
Yes.
That doesn't open. But if I copy and paste the URL and then go back up and paste it in Google, I can read what the different types of Jeeps are. But that's a pain in the butt.
I wonder if those are actually JavaScript links that aren't regular links. They tend to, instead of opening a page like a regular link does, they run a JavaScript program that does something else. And what we're seeing, two things. If JavaScript is not enabled in your Chromebook, then you won't see those things anyway. That's first.
Right.
But the second thing is we're often seeing that JavaScript kind of gets broken on the internet with great regularity. A program doesn't load the JavaScript fast enough. And so the browser just stops.
Because everyone wants their browser to be faster. So a lot of browsers are starting to cut down on the time they wait for things to load.
Right. Well, it doesn't matter what topic I'm looking at. None of these one-liners, you know, versus people also ask, and then the one-liner questions, those don't open. But if I go over to the arrow and I want to, you know, print it or whatever, that works.
Right. Right. And so what you need to do is, and Steve can put up a link of this, but it's in Google Chrome. So you click the three dots in the corner there.
Right.
Select Settings. At the bottom, click Advanced. Under Privacy and Security, you click Content Settings.
Let's see. Privacy. I got people, autofill, appearance. Privacy and settings. I'm sorry, which one?
Oh, content settings. Are you in?
I'm in advanced privacy and security.
Okay. Yeah, and then there should be a JavaScript.
There should be a JavaScript choice.
Manage certificates, site settings, clear history.
Isn't there a search at the top where you can just search a setting for Java?
Yeah, you should be able to just type in JavaScript at the top.
Search settings, JavaScript, let's see.
No, you're on a Chromebook, so it's a little different. Hold on. I'm looking here. Privacy and security.
Says no search results found when
No.
JavaScript.
Okay, you're at privacy and security. Then you want site settings.
Privacy. Let's see. Sync. Manage. Allow sites to check. No.
Farther down. Second last one. Site settings.
Site settings. Okay. Click that.
Yep, and down lower you'll see JavaScript.
JavaScript. It says allowed.
Does it? But now click on the right arrow there.
Okay.
And you'll see some sites that may be blocked.
Yeah, it says blocked. No sites added. No sites added.
Okay.
It says no sites are added.
Then it's not happening at your end. Likely, generally speaking, when you hover over any link at the bottom left, you'll see the actual link that you're about to click on.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to one of those kind of links that aren't opening for you,
right?
What you might see is instead of an actual link, the words JavaScript, and then an open parenthesis, the word void, and a closed parenthesis.
No, I don't see that.
Well, you won't see it now. You'd see it when you hovered over something
when it won't click.
Right.
Okay.
If you see that, it means the JavaScript did not load correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's not you.
Okay. All right. So it's just a quirk right now?
That's what it looks like, at least right now.
And there's nothing else I can do, right?
I'm afraid not, no.
Maybe it'll just clear in time, because it started yesterday.
Yeah, it may be just at the sites you're going to, they're having an issue. But it doesn't sound like it's your issue. You've got JavaScript turned on, so you should be seeing those things and able to click on them.
My husband says to tell you if it doesn't clear in a day or two, because he's sick of hearing me talk about it. He's going to jump out of the third-story window. Not really. Okay, well, thank you. Have a nice holiday, everyone.
You too. Thank you. Good luck with that.
Bye now. Thanks.
Yeah. So JavaScript, if you're running regular Google Chrome, it's one path. And if you're running a Chromebook, it's a slightly different path, which is where I got confused. But the reality is that JavaScript can be turned off, and many people do that because it's just not secure.
But it does break most of the web.
But it does break most of the web if you don't use it. So there are a lot of people who have kind of a love-hate relationship with JavaScript. But the reality is that yes, many places use it to do the funky stuff that you see. And, yeah, you often go to a site and you click on something, and instead of taking you a new page, it opens up this sub-page that shows up and all this other stuff. That's mostly JavaScript, and you can see down in the corner where that's going to go. But sometimes what you'll see is JavaScript, and then in parentheses the word void. And that is strictly an issue with the JavaScript itself. All right, that music tells me you've wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense, but don't go away. We're going to do it all again in just a few minutes. Take a quick bio break. I know I will. And we'll be back with a whole lot more of Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco. We've got Joe from Brighton, who patiently will be waiting on the line because he really doesn't have a choice. And you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known... Well, of course he has a choice. He can hang up. The longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the Truly Great. And truly grateful to you that we can continue to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester.
A public service of the Greece Central School District.
Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Joe from Brighton on the line, waiting patiently. Hiya, Joe. What's up?
Thanks. I need your help. I'm wondering if you would know of a good TV tuner, for over-the-air tuner for a Mac. And what if there's any free software for scheduling these TV programs.
So you can record them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The probably the biggest over-the-air tuner is from Silicon Dust.
Okay.
I am trying to quickly get there to the HD Home Run. They're available in multiple different number of tuners, so you can record 2, 4, or 6 channels at the same time.
Yeah.
And the software that it comes with has its own programming guide so that you can schedule it for recording.
Oh, wonderful. Good. So, that's not awesome.
Yeah, that runs on all the OSs, iOS and Android, Windows, Mac, even on the Xbox, the Fire Stick, the Roku. So you put this box on your network somewhere, plug an antenna into it, and then any device can watch any of the shows.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Very cool. Thanks. And Steve's going to put a link to that.
Yeah, that's one of the things people forget about when they think about cutting the cord is not all of the streaming services have local stations. You know, you can get CBS, but you may not get Channel 8.
Right.
And so you may want an antenna still for to get the local stations and local programming. But then you're back to the you have to watch it when it's on. So if you can get a DVR for your local broadcast antenna, that will work just fine.
Nice. Very, very nice. Just one more little tip about cutting the cord for those of you who are on the way to that.
There was an interesting meme going that for years we've been asking for a la carte services. We don't want to pay all this money for cable TV for all these channels we don't watch. Well, now we pretty much have a la carte services.
Mm-hmm.
And there are so many services available
right.
that when you start subscribing to all the services you want to see all the shows you want, you're going to be paying more than cable TV was.
But a lot of them you don't, though.
But somewhere yeah. in the future, we can see a time when there will be a service that will join all the other subscription services together under one umbrella.
Well, Sling sort of does that right. Yeah, but Sling sort of does that right now, I found.
Several of them do.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but on Sling, you can't get Amazon. So you have to subscribe to Amazon separately.
Hold on a minute. Now, hold on to both of you. Hold on. I hear this argument all the time. And the fact is, when I say to somebody, what do you have now?
Yeah.
Well, I've got Amazon, and I've got cable, and I've got Netflix, and I've got Hulu.
And Disney Plus now.
And I say, okay. So what you're really talking about replacing is only cable because everything else is a wash. You don't count it twice.
Yeah.
Right. You can't say I'm counting my cable against Hulu and Apple Plus and Disney Plus and this and that and the other thing when you've already got those on the other side and you're already mm-hmm. paying for them anyway.
Yep.
You don't double count.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is I'm finding something that will replace the cable portion of my current bill.
That's what I did.
So if you're paying $150 or $250 a month for cable, and it is not impossible to do that, by the way, and you can bring that down to $30, don't double count Amazon. You're already paying for it. It doesn't double count.
Yep.
Right. Like for me right now, I'm paying, it'll be a total of $85. $50 for Greenlight, and it's $35 for Slate.
And you're going to get the internet anyway.
Right.
So you sort of can't count that.
Right.
So, and that's the big thing. Your cable TV package might be $200, but the internet half of that, you got to separate the internet half, the TV a third, right. internet third, TV third, and phone third. And a lot of people throw in that phone bundle because it's supposedly cheaper. But most people these days don't use their landline that much and are only using cell phones, so you don't need to count that part. I did find a really interesting website called suppose.tv.
Yeah.
You could find all your channels on different streaming services. And so what you do is you go down through their list. I want to watch ABC, CBS, Fox. Okay. Also want USA. I want AMC. I want FX. You know, I want Disney. I want HGTV. I want food. So you click all the networks you want, and it finds the streaming service that has all those channels for you. Because it's not just, you know, I want to subscribe to Hulu TV. I want the History Channel and the Science Channel. Well, they're owned by different companies, and so they might be on different services.
Right.
No, that's a cool service, though, to provide.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very cool
thing. Well, unlike when I went to do it, I had to sit there
all by hand.
I had to do it all by hand for over a year, folks.
Yeah.
Because I literally thought, oh, well, wait a minute. Because I got to thinking, you know, wait a minute. It was the end of summer, you know, or spring, I should say, in the, you know, summer, the spring programs were coming to an end, and then, wait a minute. Yeah, there are some summer programs I watch, but more of them start up in the fall. And now you've got TV to where they go, some programs are on from, say, September to Christmas, and then they stop. And then another group of programs come on from January to spring.
Right.
They don't go now like they used to in the old days, go from September to, say, May. They right. only go half a year.
They only go half a year. I remember when a year of television was 44 episodes.
Yeah.
Get off my lawn.
Yep. Now what? They're 18?
Sometimes 13. They're 8.
Yeah.
Doctor Who's coming back.
I'm very excited about this.
But there's no Christmas special.
Isn't there? I think it's coming back Christmas Day.
New Year's Day.
Oh, New Year's Day.
So it's
That's
not coming back till next year.
Right.
New Year's. But what they are doing is they're doing a Fathom Events on January 5th in the movie theaters. It's a 2-hour and 45-minute thing. So in addition to showing the premiere episode, they're also doing a live Q&A with Jodie Whittaker and several of the companions.
Nice.
So that's going to be pretty cool.
Very nice. Yeah, things are coming back. Things have moved around. The Expanse, which was...
Yeah,
great television died and then got picked up by Netflix.
Amazon.
Amazon. Yeah. I'm looking forward to The Witcher on Netflix. So there's lots of good stuff out. One of the things is Apple TV. What's the program?
Season 4 started already.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. What's C? Is it called C?
C with Jason Momoa. Yeah,
not doing that well apparently.
And
people
there was,
don't particularly like it.
The first couple episodes were almost too graphic and too violent, because there was a lot of worry that Apple would force them to tone it down to be on a family show. But they proved that wrong the first couple episodes.
Yeah.
For All Mankind, I'm a little more interested in alternate history. I liked Man in a High Castle. It's very Philip K. Dick reminiscent of.
Yeah. And the other one with Reese Witherspoon and
the Morning
Jennifer
Show.
Aniston, the Morning Show
that had a lot of F bombs in the first episode.
Well, that got a couple of nominations for Golden Globes.
Yeah,
So that's nice. But yeah, you've got it. We're at the point where you know if you want to watch The Witcher, you better have Netflix. If you want to watch a Morning Show, you better have Apple Plus. If you want to watch what I said earlier, you got to have Amazon. And in each of those, The Expanse, you've got to then have that specific service for that specific show. And that's where you start spending your money. It's not the streaming service that provides you with your ABC, CBS, NBC. It's those extra things that will cost you money.
I have to laugh because I can still remember. We were talking about this just at work this past week. I can remember when we only had three channels.
Yep.
I remember when we got the third channel and how excited everybody was.
Yeah, and you wait in the morning for that test pattern to come off, and Real TV would kick in,
and Captain Kangaroo would come out.
Yeah. And now here we're fighting over...
After the national anthem.
This service and that service and this one and that one.
Channels went off the air at night.
I remember being excited to realize that it was the same test pattern at night and essentially the same clip of the national anthem just before it at night as it was in the morning.
In the morning, yep.
When I got to stay up late enough for that. I remember all of those things. But yeah, so you've got a lot of choices, but you know, with a lot of choices comes a lot of analysis paralysis. It's a very tough thing. All right, here's our next news item. Of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. If Google had its way, everyone would carry around a physical security key to protect our mountains of sensitive and personally identifying data. Google will happily sell you a physical security key to do that with. Alas, most of us do not, so the company has taken measures in recent years to prioritize security for users by baking them into Chrome. With the rollout of Chrome 79 this week, the company announced it's launching with new features focused on more secure browsing, two of which involve greater protection against phishing. Google maintains a blacklist of predatory sites as part of its safe browsing service that's used by browsers like Chrome and Firefox. Now, with the newest version of Chrome, desktop users will see real-time phishing alerts on unsafe sites. When you visit a website, Chrome checks it against a list stored on your computer of thousands of notice it's on your computer. of thousands of popular websites that are known to be safe. Patrick Nepper, Karan C. Nair, Vasily Sukhanov, and Varun Kanija of the Chrome team wrote in a security blog on the feature. If the website is not on the safe list, Chrome checks the URL with Google after dropping any username or password embedded in the URL to find out if you're visiting a dangerous site. Our analysis has shown that this results in a 30% increase in protections by warning users on malicious sites that are brand new. The company is also expanding on existing predictive phishing technology already in place. For users, Chrome account passwords and passwords stored in Chrome's password manager, Chrome will keep an eye on when those login credentials are entered into a potentially unsafe site. If Chrome determines that the site isn't safe, it'll display a warning and prompt the user to change their password. The added phishing protections, well, we already know not to use the same password twice everywhere. Don't we? The added phishing protections to Chrome come on top of a greater security push by Google. In early October, it added a tool that previously existed as a popular password extension, Password Checkup, until Google brought it to Password Manager section of its own Google accounts. Password Checkup lets users scan passwords, scan saved passwords to see if they've been jeopardized in any data breaches or hacks. The tool will now flag stolen passwords in Chrome as you browse. The real-time phishing protection will be made available to those who have the Make Searches and Browsing Better setting under Sync and Google Services menu in Settings toggled on. So that's you go to Settings, Sync and Google Services, and Make Searches and Browsing Better. So how secure do you feel when you browse? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. It's getting tougher out there, and so it's good to see someone like Google stepping up. They have the most popular browser in Chrome, and it's good to see that they're stepping up to keep people safe in spite of themselves.
But and that's a lot of the concern people have is on the other side. Google is the largest advertiser on the internet, and so they want all of that data to be able to sell it to other companies, and they earn money from it.
Right, and you get to make a choice. You're an adult; you get to make a choice. Do you want them to help you stay secure, or do you want to not give them data? And that it's that simple. Yep. You get to make that choice. Now, for example, I do network sniffing. Now for fun, it used to be for a living, now for fun. And so I know that when Google sends that information to their safe browsing site, it is indeed stripped of everything except the actual URL. So you are only sending them the actual URL, at least in the testing that I did. There's always got to be that caveat.
Yeah, Apple just got in trouble a week or two ago that the Safari browser... I think it was just on the iPhone. I don't know if it was on the Mac, too. It has that same sort of safe search feature. But one of the companies they hired to do that happened to be, was it Ukraine?
Yeah.
And that doesn't quite feel as nice as... Yep. So Google's doing it themselves?
In-house.
In-house. And Apple...
Well, that's not to say that they don't have a bunch of people from some other country... Yeah. On their network, but it's going to Google itself.
Yeah.
Which is really all we can say at this point. There's just a whole lot of stuff you have to do to keep yourself secure on the internet. And it is nice when a company that is anonymizing data like that. So yes, they do know that somebody went to that site. So they can gain aggregate data, but they can't. At least in the testing I did, they aren't sending your information, so they aren't targeting you. And that's just a nice thing to see. There's no personally identifiable information, PII, as they call it, personally identifiable information that gets sent along, and it's PII that is what gives you away on the internet mostly. They'll have your IP address, but you could be, sitting in a cafe somewhere surfing and it's still working. So they just know somebody in that cafe did it. At least in terms of the data that are sent, the stuff that I sniffed, and it doesn't mean they won't change it later, But right now, at least, the stuff that I sniffed was clean, quite anonymized. So that's nice. And, you know, at some point, you are trusting an astonishing number of people.
Yeah.
You're trusting your internet service provider because everything that goes through their server, they can see if they want to.
They are sending you there, so they know you're going there. They know how long you're there. They know what you're doing there.
They see all the data that passes through your system. So if they wanted to, they could capture all of those data and do whatever they want with
them. Some of them have been caught doing that.
And some of them have been caught doing that. And if you are using a VPN, remember that only encrypts data from you to the VPN. So your VPN could read all your data in plain text. So do you trust your VPN? Many people set up their own VPNs. Theoretically, you trust your own VPN. But do you trust who wrote that software and that they're not sending it on somewhere?
And that you've set it up correctly, too.
And that you've set it up correctly.
Not using the same passwords?
Yeah, never use the same password twice, ever. Ever! We keep telling people that, and they keep not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they say, oh, I think I got my identity, blah, 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 and this website got broken into, and now I got to change it on 42 other places.
Well, I don't have anything anyone wants.
Yeah, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you do.
Yeah, you have
an identity. With that identity, they can set up other accounts and take your credit and everything else right down the toilet and cause you literally months of havoc trying to straighten it all out just because you didn't want to take the time.
Yep. And in fact, they can also use your computer as their VPN.
Mm-hmm.
So if they want to go look at child porn, the address comes back to you, not to them.
Yep.
And that's where the police show up, is you.
Yep.
We've got a customer fighting with a problem now that there's a spammer using her email address.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's getting thousands of messages an hour, almost, bouncing, because email lists are bad anyway, and from angry people who are getting the spam from her.
Mm-hmm.
And she keeps asking me, how do I stop it from coming in? Well, you kind of don't.
Yeah.
We've been setting up rules and filters to try to just dump it in the junk folder. But
it's a game of leapfrog, because they'll always find a way around that block that you put up. Yep. We've said that for decades. You know, that
some programs let you say, I only want to see this email if it's in my address book.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's useful up to a point.
Except when you run a business and you get unsolicited mail from real people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep.
The only other thing you can do is keep on top of, you can change your email address.
Well, that's the thing. We've said it for years. Set up multiple email accounts.
Right.
Because when you go to some of these sites, you know, if it's a junk site, that you're never going to probably want to see them again or anything else, you can put in this email address that you can set it up so you never even have to check it because you know it's junk. So
I would say especially now when you're probably ordering a lot of stuff online.
Yeah.
Most companies, you have to use your email address so you get an email of the order. But now they start sending you useful flyers and notifications from their service.
Yeah.
Right.
Especially if I'm buying presents for somebody else, I'm never going to use this service again until next Christmas, so please don't bother me.
Right.
That's why I just set up a different email address that, you know, it can go to there, and I know it's going to be junk, and they're going to solicit, like you said, throughout the year, we got this special, Well, a lot of places always have specials.
Right.
That's just the way they do business.
Well, what I do is I have one of those addresses, and every year at Christmas, when I'm doing shopping, I remove my filter, and then after Christmas, I put it back on, and that filter says any message comes in, send it to trash.
Mm-hmm.
Boom! I don't even have to go through them ever and see them. So when I use it, I look and see did I get my confirmation or whatever. But then after Christmas, I dump all the mail and send everything from then on to trash. And then every November when I start shopping again, or December 20th, when I start shopping again, I turn that filter off. So, yeah, it's easy enough to do, and I don't even have to remember it. That's why God made Google Calendar. I have a reminder that says turn off my filter, and a reminder that says turn on my filter.
Oh, that is one thing I am so thankful for is Google Calendar and setting it up on my phone. You know, it just makes life so much easier.
So much easier.
You know, and again, you know, if I switch phones and all that, it was no big deal. I just signed into my Google account, and even on my Chromebook. Hello, I log into Chrome there, and then it reminds me of different stuff going on in that. It's just so handy to be able to just, and more companies are setting up stuff that if you want a reminder, you can tie it to your calendar.
Right.
They're adding in an event. Oh, yeah, remind me of this because, you know, maybe it's coming up in 6 months. I'd like to be reminded of that. And you can just click on the feature that says, remind me, and it'll add it to the calendar and then just pops up there. Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot all about that. And yep. Boom, there it is for you.
Yep. So, yeah, there's a lot you can do. You can leverage the power of the internet. Remember, places like Google give you free accounts. Ymail, which is Yahoo, does free accounts. So it's easy enough to create an account and just use it. Okay, we're going to take another little break here. But don't go away. We've got some more of this show coming along. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. It is the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Holy cow, that means it's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported. Jazz 90.1. See you in a couple.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. Okay, here it comes again. Microsoft will not provide new malware signatures for its homegrown Security Essentials software after it retires Windows 7 in 5 weeks. The company says, this is Microsoft. No, your Windows 7 computer is not protected by Microsoft Security Essentials after January 14th, 2020.
Surprise, surprise.
Right. MSE, Microsoft Security Essentials, is unique to Windows 7 and follows the same life cycle dates for support. So when Windows 7 finally ends extended support, you're done. Now, they said the same thing for Windows XP and continued it all for another year. They've twice said Windows 7 was going off support, and it hasn't yet.
Because people don't want to switch.
But there comes a point where Microsoft doesn't care anymore.
Yeah, but there's still also a lot of companies with turnkey systems.
That can't, yeah.
That can't.
Right.
Anyway, and I mean, just the company that I work for.
Right.
We're still on Windows 7. I mean, yeah, they should be off, you know.
It has been 5 years already. You think these companies could have upgraded.
But that's
but late. But no, so your company may not have the budget to upgrade.
We're non-profit. That's right. The whole problem. We're a nonprofit, and you go nonprofit, and not everybody has the deep pockets to turn around and, you know, all of a sudden just, all right, yeah, we're replacing all the computers and the server here for, you know, and, yeah, we'll just write a check for it.
Yep. No, and I get it, but Microsoft doesn't care.
Oh, yeah, I know.
You know, just,
I know.
Just understand that. Microsoft doesn't care. Security Essentials, which is a free antivirus program that launched in 2008, was originally limited to consumers. However, in 2010, Microsoft expanded the licensing to small businesses, defined with those with 10 or fewer PCs. 2 years after that, MSE was replaced by Windows Defender with the launch of Windows 8. Since then, Defender has been baked into each follow-up version of the operating system, including Windows 10. Windows 7, though, has stuck with MSE.
Which we've told folks right along. None of those are any, they're not worth the powder to blow them up with.
Right. Well, it has been speculated that Microsoft will continue to provide updates to MSE even after Windows 7's retirement, again, slated for January 14th. Remember, that forecast that Microsoft originally came out with was based on their behavior 5 years ago when it kept cranking out malware signatures for Windows XP users for several months after the operating system was retired in 2014. However, back in 2014, MSE still had a large pool of users, those running Windows 7, and Microsoft couldn't figure out a way to separate the XP people from the Windows 7 people. Because Microsoft was still required to produce MSE signature updates for Windows 7, there was little or no extra work needed to push the same updates to XP, right? But that's not the case now. Windows 7 is the end of the line for MSE. When MSE is done, when Windows 7 is done, MSE is done. They can just fire all of those people and save a little money. And if you don't think they'll do that in a hot New York minute.
I think they already did.
Yeah, they probably already did.
Yeah. Merry Christmas.
Without question, it would be in Microsoft's interest to continue updating MSE for Windows 7 past January 14th. Unprotected systems threaten the whole Windows ecosystem because exploitation of, say, one Windows 7 PC could lead to compromise of an entire network, all their devices,
even if
they're Windows 10, right, all the way along the line. But Microsoft has presumably weighed that against its desire to induce customers to upgrade to Windows 10. They don't want you on 7 anymore. They want you on 10. And if one way they can get you off 7 is to stop providing security updates for it, that's an easy and cheap thing for them. In fact, it saves the money to do that. So the likelihood that after January 14th, there will be no more MSE. Now, people can still use other programs.
That's what I was going to say.
For as long as they're available for Windows 7. Other companies are also not going to bother making their products compatible with an operating system that died 5 years ago.
But that's the whole problem, though. I mean, granted, Microsoft said it was dead. Only because, again, they're trying to push out new product. I get that. But there are still a lot of companies that, for them, Windows 7 still does and will do everything that they needed to do because they don't need all the horsepower and whiz-bang to do word processing, email,
and
everything else.
Microsoft doesn't care.
Right.
And the other problem is you get other companies, the people producing the antivirus and all of that stuff. Why? What is the incentive for them to pay somebody to write their code for Windows 7.
And again, that leads credence to us when we what we've been saying is go to a Chromebook.
Go to a Chromebook. If you must run a server, run Linux. If you must run a desktop, run Linux or buy a Mac. Don't keep Windows 7. Most of the things that people do, they can easily and safely and conveniently do on a Chromebook. Why spend all the money for those big, high-end, blah, blah, blah?
Unless you've got turnkey software that you have to have.
Right.
On a box, whether you're, a gamer or anything else. Even the gamers, are getting to where now they can load the software right up there online or hook up an external hard drive, load it from that, and do it. And even with the Chromebook, you can still hook up an external hard drive if you want to, save your photos or do this other stuff offline. You can still do that.
Yep.
You're not limited. But, with the Google Chromebook, you can sit there and save all your photos, all your documents. Everything is up there. You don't have to worry about a stupid operating system constantly nagging you or possibly bricking
yep.
your machine. And then making it so, oh, you can't work today because why? Oh, that last update sort of messed things up and you can't use it today. Thank you.
Or what I saw all the time when I was still working, my faculty would go into a class, open up their laptops, and Microsoft would do a 25 or 30 minute update.
Yep.
Okay. You know, okay.
No!
On my Chromebook, if I have an update, it happens in the background, and it just, the next time I reboot, I get the update. It never, ever gets in my way.
No, I constantly, and it's down in the corner, it says suggested. We did an update. Whenever you can, please restart.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And since a restart takes 8 seconds, it hardly matters.
Yeah, I said, oh, well, then do it now. And, you know, I just restart it, and by the time I come back, you know, to what, you know, that coming on, and, that was quick.
That was quick. All right, so if you're still using Windows, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
But that is the problem, though, and I get it, folks. You know, a lot of you don't have the choice, you know, especially if you're running a small business. And, you know, you've got software that you use, been using, and it's based on that. You might not have another choice.
That's right. But even so, Microsoft simply does not care. And there's not much we can do about that. You can go to Linux, you can go to a Mac,
hello?
You can go to a Chromebook,
name,
but
please?
There's nothing that you can do.
Eventually, the software you love on any platform is going to be out of date and not supported.
Right. People are just not going to. I mean, what was the file maker? They abandoned old versions of Windows, of the Mac.
And they got ridiculously expensive now. You can't buy a file. Well, you can, but you can't really buy a FileMaker for one user anymore. It's designed for big corporate users.
Right.
So it's like $600 minimum.
Right.
The other problem Microsoft is having is in their naming conventions, the new Windows 10 update, typically they've used the year number and the month number they're releasing, or they're scheduled for release. So the next Windows 10 is supposed to be 2003.
Yeah.
2003. But there already is a Windows 2003.
Right.
So they've renamed it Windows 10 2004.
Oh, good to know. Sure.
So now is the same thing going to happen in 2008?
Probably. Sure.
No, it'll be 2009.
Right. All right. Back. Hold on. There we go. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Bob from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Bob?
Good afternoon. What a terrific show today.
Thank you.
Always good, but tonight, it's just been wonderful, and you have convinced me to switch to Linux.
Wow.
I'm having one trouble. My nephew, who is a student of yours, put it on a thumb drive for me, and I'm trying to get the computer to boot to the thumb drive from Windows 10, and I'm wondering, what do I have to hit to get into the BIOS or whatever it's called so I can have it boot up from the thumb drive?
Well, that depends. My favorite answer.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a laptop or a desktop?
That's a desktop.
Almost every desktop has a boot menu key. Some key combination you hit when it's booting up.
Like F10 or F12.
It's F10,
right,
F12,
right.
Delete, escape, shift, delete. You need to look at the manual. I know. I'm sorry. It's a dirty word.
Well, some of them will.
Name.
When you're booting up the machine, sometimes it'll only flash for a brief moment. It's very quick, but it'll say for the boot menu, press this F key, and you'll see it just for a second. And what it'll do is when you hit that F, say it's F10 for the boot menu, it will say, okay, what device do I want to boot from? It'll give you that selection.
Right. Should I hold it down or keep hitting it?
No.
You can keep hitting it. Depends. It depends.
That's the trick, is you gotta hit it just right.
Right.
So either too early or too late won't work. So we used to say, safe boot was F8, so you'd mash the F8 button until you caught it.
Right. The other thing you might want to do is go into the BIOS itself. And again, how you do that depends on what kind of system you've got. But in the BIOS, you can set which devices boot first.
Right,
well, the order of device booting. And so you can set the thumb drive to be the first bootable device. Now, that's dangerous because it means that anyone with any thumb drive with any operating system on it could come up to your machine and start it up. But if it's in your home and it's a desktop and yada, 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 that's a lot less of an issue. But so you might want to do it through the BIOS instead.
Okay.
It's our pleasure. And then if you boot it up with the Linux thumb drive in, it boots to Linux. And if you boot it up without that thumb drive in, it then goes to the next device, which would be your hard drive, and loads Windows.
Well, I just can't tell you how excellent this program's been today from the hints about the library and audio, whatever it was. It was just fantastic today, and I can't thank you fellas enough.
That's what we love to hear. Thanks, Bob. Keep listening.
All right. Have a good one. Thank you again.
Bye. Bye-bye. We're sure to disappoint at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yes, many people are interested in trying Linux. One great way to do it is to have it on a thumb drive. That will be slow. Thumb drives are inherently slow devices, and when you put it on a thumb drive, it's actually zipped. So it not only is slow loading, but then it has to unzip, so it's even slower. But that's only for starting up programs. The actual running of it once it's started up should be fine. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Blake from Canandaigua, New York. Hi, Blake. What's up?
Yeah, I wanted to ask a few questions about Chromebooks.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of getting one, but for financial transactions, are they more secure than like a Windows machine?
No, but they're, yes-ish. Certainly they don't get viruses, so it's unlikely that it's impossible at this point, at least, that you will get a virus.
Or spyware
that will watch you go to your bank.
Okay.
So, yes. Of course, any time you go to your bank, you should go in, now make sure that you're at HTTPS, a secure login.
Right.
Right. So, yes. It is more secure in that, in the sense that it doesn't get the spyware that Windows is prone to.
Okay. Second question: do all Chromebooks have the Zoom feature that Windows machines have, like when you're reading something to make the type bigger?
That's a browser function, and yes.
Okay.
Yes, they do, and I don't remember.
Exactly. Usually it's just the shift key and the plus sign
command,
and minus.
Yeah, shift plus or alt plus. On the Mac, it's command plus.
Okay.
Yeah.
And could I ask you one quick question about my old Windows 7 machine?
Go.
Yeah.
I'm kind of obsessed with Task Manager when I get ready to shut down the machine. Don't ask me why, but I disconnect from the internet and everything, and then before I hit the shutdown button, sometimes the performance, I'll notice it's weird. There's no rhyme or reason to it, but sometimes my computer will be, I can tell it's really warm on the bottom, and I've got everything shut off, and the CPU is running at 100%. It's like something's left over that's sitting there running. It doesn't do it all the time.
There are a couple of things that can cause that, but one of them is a virus. So I would suggest if you're going to continue using Windows 7, dance the security tango. You may have something.
Yeah. Something that is still running in the background, even though you're shutting it down, because it runs in what they call stealth mode.
Right.
Do you see anything weird in the Task Manager?
No. There's nothing. It says there's nothing running.
But, yeah, see,
well,
it could be
that's
other
wrong, because there's always dozens of programs running.
Yeah, there's other programs running, and it's others that you might, you know, not really realize that are running. Like I said, that could be running in stealth mode.
You're likely looking at Task Manager in your ID and not seeing the other IDs because you're not running it as super user.
Yeah.
Yep.
I have 1,700 programs running on my computer right now. Really? Wow. 1,700?
Yeah. Oh, okay, no, it just went down to 1,682. I was just wondering about that. I'll probably keep my Windows 7 machine just just for the I like to copy CDs, kind of old-fashioned, send them to friends and things like that.
Sure, well, and that's perfectly fine, but make sure what you're sending is free of viruses. Dance the Security Tango at securitytango.com.
Right.
And make sure your machine is clean before you send anything to anybody.
Okay. Well, okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Blake.
See ya.
Yep.
And Windows 10 can burn CDs. I haven't tried it on a Chromebook.
You can.
There's a USB port you can read a CD with. Is there CD writing software?
I have not tried it. No.
I would imagine if it's out there as an app, you can run it.
Well, we are seeing CDs in general on a downturn because most everything is going to streaming, and you can have your own streaming service. So you can get a YouTube account for free and put your own streaming music up on your own service.
That's right.
Well, everything. I mean, they're instead of CDs, they're going to flash drives. I mean, flash drives, they're going to flash drives.
But
flash
drives are more expensive if you're burning discs to pass out to someone. A friend of mine, on Black Friday, he found one of the stores had spindles of 100 blank DVDs, and he got them for $5. So he bought 6 of them. Whew. Because he records every TV show and burns it to disc for himself. Big sci-fi fan. And so he burns everything he can. I forget how many. Well, in the olden days, he had like 8 or 9 VCRs running. He probably has as many DVRs running now, so he can burn off all this stuff and keep it, which is a lot cheaper than trying to buy all those TV shows yourself. Just record them off the broadcast.
Yeah,
right.
For your own personal viewing enjoyment.
Yes, that's one thing we have to stress and clarify. Yeah. It is for your own personal use, not for distribution.
For the longest time, you put a commercial movie in and the FBI warning said not for public distribution or public viewing. They never defined what public meant. So now they have public is 10.
Right.
So if you have a large gathering in your house of your own family, that could be public.
That's exactly right. All right, that music tells us you've wasted 2 hours of your life with this nonsense, and we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in and all their kind words. I want to remind you to call in earlier and more often, Chicago-style calling. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. It is 55 minutes after the hour. You've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we are indeed member-supported Jazz 90.1. Hope you're ready for your holidays. Be good to one another, and we will see you in just 166 hours.